The Infrastructure Strategies Committee will come to order. Missy, will you please call the roll?
Chair Payne.
Here.
Vice Chair Kennedy is excused. Committee Whip Smith.
Here.
Ranking Member Hanshofsky.
Here.
Representative Andrade.
Here.
Representative Botana is excused. Representative Brackett.
Here.
Representative Buchanan.
Here.
Representative Cassell.
Here.
Representative Cheney is excused. Representative Escamani.
Here.
Representative Gottlieb.
Here.
Representative Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Lopez.
Here.
Representative McFarland. Representative Mooney.
Here.
Representative Nixon is excused. Representative Plasencia.
Here.
Representative Redondo.
Here.
Representative Robinson.
Here.
Representative Schoaf. Here. Representative Stevenson.
Here.
Representative Tomko. Here. Representative Trunell. Here. We have a quorum.
Members, we have a quorum. Members and members of the audience, please remember to turn off your cell phones, electronic devices, or at least turn them to silent. And members, good afternoon. So today in Infrastructure Strategies, we have three bills and a presentation. And a presentation on water quality data and water quality improvement grant program. But we're going to start with Representative Persons Malucca with House Bill 317 on interstate safety. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ranking Member, members. It's a pleasure to be before you to present House Bill 317, Interstate Safety. This bill is about a more safe and efficient flow of traffic on our high-speed highways. It simply provides that the left lane is for passing only, with some common sense exceptions for emergency and maintenance vehicles when preparing to exit or when otherwise directed by traffic control signals. Members, Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there questions of the sponsor? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Persons Malucca, I've had people already a little confused about the move over law and this law. Can you please tell me how this would be work in conjunction with that law? Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for that question. As many people do not know, but should know, the current law is that when you're on any highway, road, or roadway in the state with two or more lanes going in one singular direction, if somebody comes up behind you at a greater speed, you're supposed to move over and get out of the way. That's been difficult to enforce, according to Florida Highway Patrol folks who I've talked with. It's difficult to have signage to send that message, especially when we get out-of-state drivers coming down to Florida. So what this bill seeks to do, that move-over provision remains in effect for highways that do not have a posted speed limit of 65 miles per hour or greater. But for our major highways, for our interstate highways or any major highway that's at that faster speed, we're clarifying the law like many states have done and saying that left lane is a passing lane.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. And I used the wrong title, but there's also a bill that we increased last session when you have a disabled vehicle, and we're supposed to move over a lane, which would affect possibly this left-hand lane. Is there a direction on that as well? Thank you, Chair.
Unrelated to this bill, but you're welcome to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Those statutes, like any statutes, would be read together. So let's take Highway I-10, for example. You know, the left lane is for passing, but when you have to get over because there's somebody pulled over, that would be permissible as well.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Seeing no other questions, is there public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Representative Hanshofsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank you for this bill. I do find that there's a lot of confusion on the roads today as to what the left lane should and should not be used for in my own personal driving experiences. So I think this clarification will help a lot of people who maybe are not as familiar with the move over law as they should be. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that this is a great bill. I supported it last year. I will be supporting it again. And anything that we can do to promote this and make sure that all people that's driving in Florida understands would be great. So thank you.
Representative Gottlieb, questions or debate, excuse me.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank you for bringing the bill. I practice criminal defense, and I see some road rage cases all the time. So, for instance, I just had one where somebody was forced to pass on the right because the driver on the left wouldn't move over, and somebody moved left at the same time, and it turned into, you know, a whole incident. I see it as a safety concern. Too many people are passing on the right because there's somebody who is owning the left lane and driving too slow, and it creates all kinds of hazards on the road. So I applaud you for bringing the bill back. Thank you.
Additional debate. Anybody? Representative Person Blocker, you're recognized to close on House Bill 317.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief, but I want to follow up on something Representative Gottlieb said. We have had a major issue with folks maneuvering and passing on the right hand because of the folks camping out in the left lane. And in fact, since 2018, there have been over 17,000 accidents reported as a direct result of passing on the right. And in 2022 alone, the Florida Highway Patrol cited 13,000 drivers for improper lane changing on the right. I drove up here myself 6+ hours yesterday, and I don't have enough fingers on my hand to count the number of people camping out in the left lane that was causing these traffic maneuvers and causing issues on the highway. So members, I ask for your vote because we need this bill to pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Missy, will you please call the roll and announce the vote?
Representative Zandrotti? Brackett?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Hunchofsky?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Redondo?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko? Trunell? Chair Payne?
Yes.
20 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, show that bill is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, members.
Members, now we'll take up CS for HM 143, tax-exempt private activity bond. Representative Siroy, you're recognized.
Good afternoon, members. Chair Payne told me that I was going to present first today, but then he decided I was slow traffic and told me to move over. Members, this memorial asks Congress to add spaceports as qualifying under the IRS code for tax-exempt financing. We would treat our spaceports the same way as our airports and seaports. That's the memorial, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions of the sponsor? Seeing no questions, is there public testimony? No public. Oh, we do have one. Lindsay Pierce, Space Florida, Director of Government Relations. She is waving in support. Thank you, Lindsay. Another public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Debate on the bill. Seeing no debate, Representative Roy, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Having waved close, Missy, will you call roll announce the vote?
Representative Zandrotti?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Hunchofsky?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Redondo?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Schoaf? Yes. Smith?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Trunell?
Yes.
Chair Payne?
Yes.
28.
Members, by your vote, show the bill is reported favorably. Congratulations. Thank you. Okay, members, now we'll take up CS for HB 437, anchoring limitation areas, by Representative Porras. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and Ranking Member. Members, the legislature previously placed anchoring limitations on a portion of the Venetian Islands in Miami-Dade County, but omitted some of these islands surrounding, creating a patchwork of limitations that's proven to be very difficult for enforcement meanings. Unfortunately, the current law is not working as intended, and that's why this legislation is necessary. This bill would address those omissions and limit anchoring to more than 200 yards off of any portion of City of Miami Beach located between the Tuttle and the MacArthur Causeways. The environmental damage that we've been seeing in Miami-Dade County, especially in this vital portion of Biscayne Bay, has been creating a massive health hazard, as well as human waste and trash that has not been properly disposed of. The area addressed in this bill is a popular recreation boating area, perhaps probably the most traveled in the state, and permanently anchored boats create a safety and health hazard for recreational boaters. I would leave plenty of locations also for Biscayne Bay for overnight anchoring. This bill would not by any means completely shut down the geographic area defined in this bill, and I'd love to get into more detail, but that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Great. Members, are there questions of the sponsor on the main bill? Representative Hussosky, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Representative Porras for spending so much time educating me on the issues that you're trying to address. So as I mentioned to you, I got lots of questions from people if there's still going to be ample room for them to anchor when they're going on a longer trip, and if could you just explain what they're going to have available to them still, even if this law goes into effect.
Thank you. Other questions of the sponsor?
Indian Creek Island, which is a little bit more up north in the bay, but still gives that possibility for anchoring, as well as some areas in Virginia Key. And, you know, I'm more than happy to talk with some of these groups of boaters to make sure that the municipality and some of the groups there make arrangements for them. So thank you.
Representative Gottlieb, you have a question?
Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Recognize.
Thank you. I'm concerned about something you said, and I fully support your bill. Mm-hmm. But you indicated in your opening that we're seeing some discharges, so some human waste discharges. Have we considered increasing the penalties? That should not be happening within 3 miles mm-hmm. of the shore. It creates obviously a health hazard as well. As you know, we need to preserve our clean waterways for both humans and marine habitat. So has there been any discussion about perhaps increasing the penalties in conjunction with this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for this bill's purpose, I haven't contemplated further criminal penalties. However, the main issue we've been seeing is the lack of enforcement. And you know, this bill addresses that by encompassing part of Miami Beach, therefore allowing the municipality to deal with a little bit of that enforcement. And I think we do have somebody from the city here who's going to dive a little bit further deeper into what that would look like. But you're absolutely right. That should not be happening. And, you know, I'd like to see some penalties in the future if it continues to happen.
Additional questions of the sponsor? Rep. Stevenson, you recognize?
Thank you, Chair. So currently, people are allowed to anchor there for unlimited amounts of time.
You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is not new legislation. So the bill beforehand, like I mentioned, had several different islands that had these anchoring limitation areas in the past. I believe in current statute it was 45 days. This bill would obviously change that to 1/2 hour after sunset and 1/2 hour before sunrise.
Follow up.
Thank you. Have you considered a less restrictive limitation? When we spoke, it seemed like you had problems with people that are effectively living there or staying for very long periods of time. For through cruisers, picking up a mooring ball isn't always an easy choice. The weather is not always friendly for that, and we've discussed that some. But have you considered like a 3 to 5 day or 48 hours for through cruisers to have the ability? Sometimes they're having equipment problems, their travel plans may not go exactly right, so they can't fit within those time limits.
Recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Stevenson, for allowing me some time in your office. I know this is a very concerning issue for a lot of the boating community, and I just want to say how sympathetic I am, obviously, to the people, you know, using this waterways, because as it should be a free waterway. However, you know, the lack of enforcement, like I mentioned, and the health hazard does not make, you know, does not allow for me to say which period of time is appropriate. I wouldn't necessarily say that 3 to 5 days is better than a week or a month or 30 days. So essentially that's why we put the limitations in place. And if we really want to see a change in some of the health hazards and the safety hazards that we're seeing, I think this limitation is the one that we would need at the moment. But I'd be more than happy to continue that conversation with you.
Yeah, another question, please.
I think the problem you said in the beginning was enforcement, and what I think is happening is some of the intended users that are not bad behaviors are being punished by the arbitrary time schedules that you've chosen, and a day or two makes a big difference to a long-range cruiser. Thank you.
Is that a question?
That was debate. I didn't hear a question mark there. But
please, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but please consider that as you move forward. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Other questions? We do have an amendment. So there's amendment by Representative Buchanan, barcode 194845. Representative Buchanan, you're recognized. Explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. This amendment's adding some technical and clarifying language to existing statute based on feedback from law enforcement and some other stakeholders. We are adding the word nautical to describe the 1 mile minimum of which a boat would have to be relocated for a period of time. Additionally, we are adding permanently affixed to the vessel to describe the navigational, electronic navigational device of which would be used on that vessel. That is the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Questions on the amendment, members? Any questions? We do have public testimony. So I do have four or five. Are these on the amendment? Oh, they're on the bill. Okay, so no public testimony on the amendment. Debate on the amendment. Members, debate on the amendment. Seeing none without objection, show that amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony on the bill? There is. Bonnie Basham, Boat USA, and she is an opponent. Would you like to speak? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I imagine some of you have heard from our 167,000 plus members about this bill. We strongly oppose it. We're concerned that since Miami-Dade is in the process of siting anchoring areas, and is siting them pretty much in the areas in the bill, we would prefer that local government, where local government constituents can come and talk, would be the place that this issue is resolved rather than all the way up here in Tallahassee. There aren't as many good options for overnight anchoring, and this will take some of those away. There are boats that wait for weather or provisioning to go over to the Bahamas. This will take those areas away. And it'll institute a policy of using state laws to manage waterways without providing options for active, responsible cruising boaters. So we would oppose this bill. We would ask you to oppose this bill. And I appreciate, I'll be glad to take any questions if the chair allows.
I don't think there's any questions, Ms. Basham. Thank you.
Thank you.
Continuing on public testimony, Commissioner David Suarez, City of Miami, is a proponent. You recognized?
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is David Suarez. I am a newly elected City Commissioner of Miami Beach. I've knocked on 5,000 plus doors in Miami Beach, and one of the main concerns was the derelict boats that are plaguing our waterways. In the last 5 years, it has gotten significantly worse. And Representative Gottlieb, you mentioned about increased fines. I want you to see this. This is an oil spill from one of the boats that are in our bay. I have another one.
Commissioner, we're not supposed to use... I appreciate you doing that, but maybe we'll catch him afterwards. So thank you.
We have an ecological disaster that's happening in our Biscayne Bay. I'm not sure if you're familiar with how our Biscayne Bay is, but it's on the brink of collapse. There is barely any seagrass left, and the boats that are there anchored during high winds scrape miles and miles of seagrass off our floor. They do not move. They do not go to the pump-out stations. They release their black waters into our Biscayne Bay. I have two small children. I don't bring them into the bay to dive. And unfortunately, now we have business operations or charter operations who set up floating docks for jet skis, 10, 12 jet skis at a time in our bay. And our commission is unanimous on this issue. we need relief. And we, as far as enforcement goes, as far as a timeline, the best timeline is overnight, because when people want to look outside the window and they, or our code enforcement or our Marine Patrol, it's easy to say there's no boats out there. And so, you know, I was elected to represent the citizens, residents, and voters of Miami Beach. The boating community, they are not who I represent, okay? I care about our environment and our well-being. And so I am very much in favor of this bill, and I hope this passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next we have Kingsley Ross, Seven Seas Cruising Association is an opponent. And Mr. Ross, you'd like to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members. I want to thank Representative Perez for sitting down with us a couple of times and the generous use of his time to discuss this. We, however, continue to disagree about this particular bill. From my point of view, this bill is a shotgun one. We should be using a rifle. The reason is it hits so many people other than the intended people who he and the commissioner wished to have resolved and fixed. This bill hits long-range cruises because we use government cut to jump to Bimini. We use that because it's the closest point in the U.S. between us and Bimini. You can go back and forth, but you'd want to do it in such a way that you arrive at your destination in daylight. In the case of Bimini, you want to get there because there's very few navigation aids, and you actually navigate by sight, by seeing the bottom, the water's clear. To do that with a slow-moving cruising boat, you have to leave with this bill before dawn, which means you are actually traveling at night when it's very difficult and the chances of hitting an obstruction, the bottom or something else in the water at Crab Pot, is high. The opposite is true. You do not leave Bimini at night because it's so difficult. Again, there's no navigation aids. Conversely, you do not want to arrive in Florida because of all the lights the city has. It basically blinds you from seeing your navigation aids. You want to arrive in the daylight. You want to find a place to anchor. This bill takes that option away. Therefore, it puts cruisers like myself in danger. Again, the bill hits everybody. It also, as Bonnie has said, removes the opportunity to actually provision. There is a Publix right there. Cruisers like Publix and other close by things because they don't have cars. They can't run down the road to pick up groceries or other things they need, drugs or other kinds of medicines. They have to have easy access. This removes that option. You can't just come in with a slow boat, anchor for a few hours, and leave, because where are you going to anchor? The other area of this bay, which is available for anchoring outside the 200 yards, is too shallow. It's wading deep. It's my chest height deep. You can't take a boat, a sailboat, into that kind of water and safely anchor there because the waves begin to pound and you'll pound the bottom. It's for these reasons that we oppose this bill. And I do want to continue the work with Representative Parris. He's been very generous. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Next we have Kimberly Russo, American Great Loop Cruisers Association, wishes to appear, and she is an opponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. I am the director of America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We are a group of boaters exploring the Great Loop, which is a 5,000-mile circumnavigation of the eastern U.S. It includes the entire coastline of Florida, from the Panhandle all the way up the Intracoastal to Jacksonville. We are 6,000 memberships strong, which represents 6,000 boats with a dream of cruising Florida's waters. We are primarily retirees on the trip of a lifetime or planning for the trip of a lifetime. We strongly oppose this bill, and we hope that you'll do the same. We actually agree with the representative and with the commissioner on the problems. Those problems exist, and those problems need to be solved. Everything described, though, already has laws to address them. It is already illegal to discharge black water. There are noise ordinances in place. There are ordinances that protect against illegal businesses that are pulling up a floating dock and putting jet skis there. This is not an issue that will be resolved by more restrictions. It's an issue that can be resolved by enforcement on the restrictions that are already in place. A few years ago, I had the privilege to be part of a collaborative process between some other boating associations and us, FWC, and some members of the legislature here. And the compromise collaborative solution that passed that year was part two of the anchoring limitation areas, where boats can stay in place for 45 days. We support the idea of some clarification on that, but that was meant to be the solution to this derelict vessel issue. We dislike derelict vessels, abandoned vessels, long-term stored on the water vessels as much as the citizens of Biscayne Bay. But by preventing active, responsible cruisers who also love the environment from being able to anchor on their trip, it's really an injustice to them. There's a huge economic impact from boating on Biscayne Bay, and to cite just one source, the 2003 Biscayne Bay Economic Study Report, which was prepared for the South Florida Water Management District and Miami-Dade County, found that the overall contributions of Biscayne Bay-related boating activities is $64 billion in economic output, $24 billion in income, 448,000 jobs, and $4 billion in tax revenue to Miami-Dade County. That is significant, and it should be considered. In closing, Representative Porras mentioned one of the boundaries on the bill is currently the Julia Tuttle Causeway. One of our members is actually the great-granddaughter of Julia Tuttle, and she pointed out to us that her great-grandmother actually donated a lot of the land in question here to Flagler to build the railroad, because Julia Tuttle wanted to see this area used for recreation and to bring more people to this area for recreation. There's actually a statue of her looking out over the bay where you're considering limiting anchoring. Please consider that and follow her dream of bringing more people into the Biscayne Bay area to explore. Thank you. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Last appearance card is Mr. Ron Book, representing the City of Miami. He is a proponent, and there he is. Mr. Book, you're recognized.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ron Book, representing the City of Miami Beach. I've got a bundle of other cities, but I'm here specifically for Miami Beach today. You know, I'm amused by some of the comments made by some folks that came here before I spoke, because as millennials would say, I've been in this issue for a very long minute. In fact, all those changes that they spoke about, we were involved in those changes. I'm amused by the cruisers who come up here and suggest to you, leave this to the locals. They wanted you in this fight when they could have a moratorium keeping all the locals from doing anything related to mooring fields. To the question, Mr. Chairman, that was asked by Representative Gottlieb, let me be clear. Here's what they do. They discharge their effluent into the bay. They don't care. Why? Because they don't live in Florida. Because while they claim to care about the environment, when you don't have a mooring field to tie up to, when you don't have a legal place to discharge that waste, it goes in the bay. And so when the local Marine Patrol shows up to give them a citation, you know where the citation ends up? Wadded up, tossed in the bay, because there is no enforcement. I would suggest to any of you, if you lived on waterfront property where these folks are anchoring. I wonder how you'd feel if they were peering into your home with binoculars. Because the last time we addressed this broader issue, we produced a whole lot of footage of just that. People with binoculars, people with bright lights shining them into people's homes. So there's a reversal here. We want people to cruise here. We want people to come here. But we want to respect the ad valorem rights of taxpayers who live on those waterfront properties, because they have rights too. And while I would agree we could toughen up the laws, there are plenty of laws and regulations in place. Unfortunately, they don't apply, or some folks don't believe they apply, when they simply cruise down here from other parts of the world. This isn't a matter of Floridians doing these things. This is a matter of people coming to Florida and not respecting our environment and not respecting our property owners. When Commissioner Suarez stands up here in front of you, brand new commissioner elected a month and a half ago, he's getting pounded by his constituents. Pounded because the same problem exists today in certain parts. Because what we did was we took those who were screaming the loudest a number of years ago, and we carved those things out. And again, I want to end by simply saying, the cruisers were all in favor of your involvement when they could have a moratorium stopping the locals from doing the things the locals wanted to do to protect your constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Book. That ends public testimony. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. Is there debate on the bill? Representative Andrade, recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. My main concerns on the bill are a due process and proper notice concern. First, the section is amending what is actually being grandfathered in. I understand this bill hasn't moved on the Senate side yet, but if we're changing what's been grandfathered in and creating new language in that section, we may want to stop saying that that section has been grandfathered in. The second is the rest of the statute discusses how local governments can change or amend areas that have anchoring limitations and put certain requirements in place like signage and buoys. There's no requirement like that for a state change. I don't know, but I believe this would probably be the first time that we've changed the grandfathered in sections. And so that proper due process notice requirement should probably be considered. I understand that might create a fiscal impact, but I believe that that would be necessary to comply with due process.
Good. Representative Rendon, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, this is my first time commenting in debate, so I just want to say I appreciate you bringing this bill. Born and raised in South Florida, spent a lot of time on the waterways, and I think this bill is addressing a very important concern that we have in South Florida, particularly with the Bay. And I just want to note, I mean, there are specific exceptions, I understand, in the bill for things like mechanical failure, weather, recreational fishing, and attending certain things like concerts and regattas. So I think this bill strikes an appropriate balance of trying to protect our Bay and protect those responsible boaters and dealing with the issues that we've all seen personally down in South Florida, where there is not just derelict vessels, but vessels that are discharging, notwithstanding the fact that these things are already illegal. But again, it's a challenge of enforcement. So I'll be up on the bill today, and thank you for bringing it.
Representative Stevenson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. And I appreciate the concerns of the bill, but there's a giant gulf between 45 days and no extra days for extended cruisers. And I think that it's enforceable. I personally would not have chosen one nautical mile. I would have chosen a longer distance for that purpose because of the ability of people just to move a small distance for and say that we've moved. If you're accommodating through cruisers, that would be a different thing. But they do experience mechanical failure. Winds don't comply. Sometimes people will arrive injured if they had a difficult crossing. So I have to oppose the bill because of my experience as a boater and the many boaters, Florida voters, who have contacted me on this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Representative McFarland, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Porras, for this bill. I represent Sarasota, the coastal part of Sarasota, so we have bays, barrier islands, and a lot of boaters. So I've been tracking this bill for quite a while, and I wanted to share some of the conversations that I've had with Representative Porras after I shared my concern in the beginning. My first question to him is, why is this not a local bill? And he reminded me that Miami-Dade County cannot run local bills, so that is a bit of education I would remind all of us about. And Biscayne Bay is state waters, as we've established today. I have concerns about the precedent that this sets for anchoring limitation areas in other parts of the state, but here's why I'm going to support the bill today. Representative Porras is fighting for his community, and so is Commissioner Suarez, who's come up here. This is a local issue, which I cannot speak to because I don't live in their district, and I don't know what that water looks like. I respect Representative Porras, and I respect that he's fighting for his community, as he always does, and I'm going to respect that in this bill today and vote in support of it. Now, for those of you who feel that this is a bad bill and hope that it will fail, you have every opportunity to find a different bill sponsor next session and try to undo this portion of law that we've done here today. And as long as I sit in this seat and represent Sarasota, I will protect anchoring limitation areas in my district as well. And that's what I do as a local representative, and that's what he's doing as a local representative. For that reason, I'll be voting in support of this bill today.
Representative Mooney in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, I understand what you're going through. We did this anchoring bill for Monroe County a few years back. There's a lot of heartache. I'm a former blow boater. I understand timelines and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, this is really about the degradation of the floor of the Biscayne Bay. What we found out in Monroe County is that the pain that we felt early on has sort of diminished to the point where everybody understands that this is for the good. And it also enhances the enforcement aspect. I'd like to think the local communities, local Miami Beach and City of Miami and Miami-Dade County would work together to create mooring fields in places that are less environmentally sensitive, that allow for pump-out stations to be close, put the stickers on the boat like we require in Monroe County for our long-term residents, because there are a lot of blow boaters out there and boaters in general who are on the hook because they work in your community. So, but the beauty of this thing is it allows for better enforcement. And we have really, since that bill passed a few years back, have had almost zero issues with our anchoring. We're putting more mooring fields in. The boaters are finally coming to grips that, you know, it's not a bad thing, because right in front of my house, there are 5 sunken boats right now from that storm that came through a few weeks ago. Those were derelict vessels to begin with. They're not well cared for. But that won't happen anymore when you have this bill passes. You're putting your community in a position to enhance the environment, protect the environment, and at the same time, actually protect the boaters. So I learned one thing about mooring fields. It becomes a neighborhood. The Lower Keys and Key West, where almost all our mooring fields are at, they actually become neighborhoods. There are neighbors looking out for neighbors, and that's a good thing. So good for you. I know it's a tough one. I know the boating community is having heartburn. I understand it, but at the end of the day, it's bigger than all of us, because that bay is extremely valuable to the environment of South Florida and the state of Florida. So I'm up in the bill today.
Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to reiterate, I'm up on the bill. I have no issues with it. I don't even see it as a local issue. I've got problems in Fort Lauderdale where I boat. I was in Lake Sylvia yesterday. There's a designated mooring field. There's boats anchored outside the mooring field in the right-of-way. It's just terrible, and you have to weave and maneuver, and it makes for unsafe conditions. Also want to say that a slow-moving boat at 8 miles an hour going to Bimini, which is a 44-mile nautical mile trip, is about 6 hours. So there's still 6 hours of daylight. I don't see why anybody has to leave in the dark. So I'm not sure I understand that kind of argument here, and there should be plenty of time, even in a 10-mile-per-hour southeast wind. So support the bill. I think what you're doing is great for Miami, and hopefully it does set a precedent or the rest of the state that we want to keep and preserve Florida the way it is. Thank you.
Representative Robinson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Porras. I am from South Florida, from Miami-Dade County, and I love the water. And so what you're doing to try to really keep Biscayne Bay clean and nice, I really appreciate it. And I do want to thank Rep. McFarland for really pointing out that, yes, being a part of Miami-Dade County, we are not allowed to have local bills. And when we hear and we have a local bill, we support it because we know that local community knows what their community needs. So I would hope that all of you all would think of this in that stance and support this bill, because in Miami-Dade County, for Biscayne Bay, that is what we need.
Representative Cassell in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you, Representative Porras, for speaking to me about this. I represent a majority of coastal Broward, and this is a huge problem, in particular for City of Hollywood. And we worked on some language, and for other reasons, we're not going to go ahead and bring an amendment that would do something similar. But, you know, as many representatives have said, you are here representing your district and issues that you face. And I'm a big believer that when a representative comes and tells me a problem they're having, that we should support it. So I experience this as well. My community experiences as well. It's an environmental issue. It's a property rights issue. It's something that we really need to look out for Floridians. And for those good actors who are boating and not anchoring and not staying for 45 days and then moving one day and coming right back, you know, this will just be something that they need to maneuver around, but they will still have the rights to access the waterways, which we know is important. So thank you for this. Thank you for fighting your community and taking the time to work with me.
Any other members in debate? Seeing none, Representative Porras, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to start by thanking everyone that took the time to listen to this issue for me, and those from the voting community behind me that came to my office, that sat with me for many hours to try to see how we can accommodate that and how we can fix some of the issues on both sides. But, you know, members, we, as a member of this delegate, as this body, one of our most important duties is being a good steward to our state's environment, to our state's intercoastal waterways. And this is exactly what we're doing in this piece of legislation. We talked about some of the bills. We talked about some of the things that aren't working. This bill specifically allows for the more municipal enforcement, which is exactly what the bay needs. Now, Biscayne Bay, as we mentioned, is one of the largest, one of the most toured places in our state. We have boaters from all over, but we also have residents that live right there on the bay. And, you know, those residents are rightfully concerned, and you know, I'd be a bad representative if I didn't stand up here and fight for them. So thank you guys for your support, and I hope you vote up on the bill.
Representative Porras, having closed on this bill, Missy, will you please call the roll?
Representative Zandrotti?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Buchanan?
Yes.
Cassell?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Hunchowski?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Redondo?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Schoaf? Yes. Smith?
Yes.
Stevenson?
No.
Tomko? Yes. Trunell? Yes. Chair Payne?
Yes. 19 yes, 1 day. Members, by your vote, show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations. Okay, members, now we'll move on to a presentation by Mr. Adam Blaylock, Deputy Secretary of Ecosystem Restoration with the Department of Environmental Protection. Mr. Blaylock, thanks for being here today, and you are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Chair Payne and committee members. It's a pleasure to be here to be able to talk to you today about water quality in the state of Florida, and also our water quality grant program. Just to start off, to give you an idea of kind of how the department and the state protects water quality, this framework provides a visualization of kind of the steps that are taken in that process, beginning with setting of water quality standards. The department sets water quality standards, which are basically the amount of a pollutant that can be in a water body and protect against impacts based on its designated use, whether it's for drinking water, aquaculture, boating, fishing, recreation. And typically these pollutants are established in concentrations such as nutrients. You'll typically see milligrams per liter. And as long as the water body has a less amount of concentration of a particular pollutant, then it should be protective of public health and the environment and ecosystem. And then once we set water quality standards, then the department does extensive water quality monitoring to determine whether there are any pollution problems and whether a water body is impaired or not meeting those water quality standards that are established. Once the water quality is determined to be impaired, the department will establish restoration targets known as total maximum daily loads. And so this basically establishes the amount of loading of a particular pollutant, such as nitrogen or phosphorus, that a water body can have in it and still meet the set water quality standards. The department will assess all of our water bodies every 2 years to determine whether they're meeting the water quality standards, and this allows us to be continually providing up-to-date data on the health of specific water bodies. And then once we know what the restoration target is, we work with stakeholders and community leaders to develop our restoration plans, otherwise known as basin management action plans. And this basically takes the total maximum daily load. It establishes, we know this is how much of a pollutant can go and be discharged into a water body to meet water quality standards. Given that a water body is impaired, thus meaning that the amount of that pollutant is currently higher than what is acceptable to protect the water body. So we develop these plans working with stakeholders to identify what are the sources of these pollutants, whether it's for nutrients, a wastewater treatment plant, septic tanks, stormwater, agriculture, and we identify and allocate here is the amount of nutrients that you can discharge into the water body and still meet water quality standards. If that amount is higher, then we know this is the amount that needs to be reduced to pull back on and meet that total maximum daily load. And so we work with stakeholders, we identify the sources of pollution, we set allocations and reductions to specific entities that are responsible for contributing to those water quality impacts, and then we implement that. Typically our BMAPs are over a 20-year planning horizon. And in the last couple of years, which I'll get to, we've added some additional requirements basically making it to where there's a little bit higher level of oversight on meeting those long-term restoration goals. And we determine whether we're being successful by continuing water quality monitoring to determine once there's been projects and reductions in pollution, whether or not we're seeing that same response in the water body that's has the restoration plan. If we start implementing projects and you're not seeing those reductions in the water body, or you're not seeing the ecological response, if you're still seeing algae blooms and different things like that, then we'll go back, look and collect additional data to make sure that the amount of reduction that we initially identified as necessary is still accurate, and whether or not additional reductions need to be made. And so that's basically in kind of a real high level, kind of how water quality standards get adopted, how we determine whether water body is impaired, how we implement restoration plans to meet those water quality standards, and then the long-term monitoring that goes on to ensure that those protections are met. In addition to our basin management action plans, we also have two other categories of restoration plans. These are also established in the Clean Water Act, and these are our pollution reduction plans and our reasonable assurance plan. A pollution reduction plan is typically used whenever there's maybe a single or just a couple stakeholders that are responsible for the impairment. You might have a water body that's impaired, and maybe there's just one wastewater treatment facility that's in that area and that we've shown is needing to reduce. We'll work with that entity or local government, establish a plan to do projects that will eventually meet the water quality. And just there's not the expansive number of stakeholders to really need to have a full-scale basin management action plan. And these are also approved by the department and then subsequently approved by EPA. And then the regional assurance plans, these are basically the same as a basin management action plan. Typically, if there's a group of stakeholders that have identified their water body being impaired, but we have not yet established a total maximum daily load and BMAP, and they want to voluntarily go and develop the plan to set the allocations and the reductions in projects. We will oversee that, and they'll develop that plan, and then it also gets approved by us and by EPA before being implemented. Sometimes these can be done in an area that can be done quicker than going through the TMDL and the modeling and the BMAP and the authorizations. And so there's been a lot of good examples of these in Tampa Bay. Miami-Dade County is currently in the process of establishing one, and there's been one in existence in the Indian River Lagoon that's also been very successful. Just to go over a few data points on water quality, currently there's roughly 2,300 waters not attaining standards, and 1,185 of those are on the verified list. We've adopted 460 TMDLs, 33 BMAPs, and a number of alternative restoration plans where appropriate. And this map shows the outline of where our basin management action plans are identified. You'll see in the St. John's going down through the Orlando area, Lake Okeechobee, Coosadgee, St. Lucie, Indian River Lagoon, and then our Springs areas in the central and going down north of Tampa Bay. We update our BMAPs every 5 years, working with stakeholders and to identify if there's any additional needs that need to be addressed and whether we're making the progress laid out in the management plan. And over the last couple of years, we've implemented some additional regulatory requirements for some specific sources of nutrients. Wastewater treatment plans and our septic tank remediation plans. And the Clean Waters Way Act, Senate Bill 712 in 2020, the legislature directed us to adopt these restoration and remediation plans into our BMAPs. They're provided us from local governments, and it's basically if a wastewater treatment facility is responsible for 20% of the impact for a nutrient-impaired water body, they will identify the plan that's going to be implemented to meet those necessary reductions. And the same for septic tanks. If septic tanks are more than 20% of the impact to water quality, they will also identify how the local government's planning to address those needs and a remediation plan that then we will adopt and put into the specific BMAP where those are located. And we have to adopt each of these remediation plans by July 1st, 2025. And lastly, we also, legislature and Senate Bill 712 required Department of Agriculture when they're doing their BMP enrollments and enforcements to identify and calculate the amount of fertilizer being used in an agricultural operation and report that to the department just to be able to get a sense of the amount of phosphorus that might be used in a regional part of the state and to allow us, particularly in some of our more rural BMAP areas, to really pinpoint where the greatest need for projects and regional projects might be. And also to ensure that BMPs are being met and followed, and in all of our BMAPs, best management practices are required to be implemented. So FDACs will reach out to the landowners, let them know that they need to enroll. If they choose not to enroll, then FDACs reports those to us, and they're required to do water quality monitoring in lieu of their best management practices. So getting into last year, Executive Order 2306, directed DEP to take steps to strengthen all of our basin management action plans, and the legislature passed House Bill 1379 that put in several provisions to do just that. One of the main things that we did was establishing five-year milestones. In the past, our BMAPs were basically 20-year planning horizons, and with no real process in between year one and year 20 to really be able to make those entities that have allocations accountable for the reductions that they were required to meet. And so putting in these five-year milestones, requiring the stakeholders that have specific load allocations to identify the projects that they're gonna implement to meet these five-year milestones will allow us that ability to come in, make sure that those that are required to reduce their nutrient pollution are doing so in a timely manner. And so the end of the 20-year period or less, depending when the BMAP was adopted, we we have some better assurance that we are going to achieve the necessary reductions to meet water quality standards and bring that water body into impair off of the impaired list. It also directed FDECs to look at regional agricultural projects that could be voluntarily implemented to reduce the amount of nutrients that are being attributed to agriculture if agriculture is in a particular BMAP a source of the nutrient impairment. And then we've also included, we'll implement and adopt those projects into our BMAPs and be able to address any additional nutrient reductions that's necessary on top of when you have full basin best management practice implementation. And then one other thing that was adopted in 1379 was also the prohibition on new septic tanks in our BMAP areas and restoration plan areas where sewer is available. And if sewer is not available, then new development would be required to have nutrient reducing advanced septic systems. And statewide by 2033, all wastewater facilities discharging to an impaired water body must be upgraded to advanced waste treatment standards. In addition to the statewide BMAP provisions, it also put some focus on the Indian River Lagoon, creating the Indian River Lagoon Protection Program. There was primarily three parts to this. It created several nutrient-reducing requirements, provided funding, and also made it to where adopted a comprehensive water quality monitoring program within the Indian River Lagoon. The Indian River Lagoon Protection Program encompasses the three basin management action plans within the Indian River Lagoon and the Mosquito Lagoon Reasonable Assurance Plan. The two main regulatory requirements in this in the Indian River Lagoon Protection Program is that beginning January 1, 2024, again, unless the sewer is not available, new septic tanks are going to have to be advanced nutrient enrichment and nutrient reduction septic systems, or new development will have to be used central sewer where available. And probably the largest piece of this legislation for the purpose of nutrient reduction is by July 1, 2030, any commercial or residential property with an existing septic tank will have to either hook up to central sewer where central sewer is available or install a nutrient-reducing advanced septic system. And to support these efforts, the governor called for $100 million to support this program, which the legislature provided, and we were able to get a significant number of projects and fund a significant number of projects. Out of the $100 million, we funded roughly 21 projects. Doesn't seem like a lot, but they were big projects that had a tremendous amount of nutrient reduction. It targeted over 1,500 septic tanks, reduced nitrogen in the basin by 74,000 pounds, and reduced phosphorus by an estimated 15,000 pounds. So to go into our water quality grant program, this initially was the wastewater grant program that was adopted in House Senate Bill 712 in 2020. We saw it in the legislature expanded this to incorporate the new wastewater grant program. I'll go through kind of what those differences and how it was expanded. It's funded through dock stamp revenue. And this past year, the legislature funded that program $200 million. We roughly, depending on dock stamp revenues for the year, see anywhere from $100 and $120 million, kind of has fluctuated since the grant program was first implemented. So one of the main things that we wanted to expand in the wastewater grant program under the new water quality was the areas of the state where projects would be eligible. And so instead of just being in a BMAP or a RAP area, expanding that eligibility to water bodies not attaining nutrient or nutrient-related standards. And this was really to address the concern or just the reality that there's areas that are impaired that we want to be able to fund to protect and to reduce nutrients that may not have a BMAP in place yet, and so not wanting to unnecessarily not be able to do projects in those areas, and also primarily to expand the sources of nutrient pollution that could be funded by these projects. We know under the existing wastewater grant program, it really looked at doing septic to sewer upgrades and upgrading wastewater treatment facilities to advance waste treatment. But we really felt strongly about expanding that to include stormwater treatment. We know in a lot of, particularly our urban areas, that stormwater is a significant source of nutrient pollution and has a direct impact on water bodies impairment, particularly in IRL and Miami-Dade, Jacksonville, all the kind of urban centers where stormwater is a big source. And lastly, having specific funding for those regional agricultural projects that FDACS identifies and we incorporate into our BMAPs, and also specifying that we can fund projects that are identified in those wastewater and septic tank remediation plans, wanting to provide that incentive to get those plans adopted so that then they can be eligible for funding under this grant program. And the legislature also put in some criteria to allow us to be able to look and rank and score these projects, looking at see whether there's been any cost share, previous commitment, if they're ready, cost effective, are in a location where the reduction is the most needed, trying to focus in on those areas of the state where the pollution reduction is really the most needing of projects. And then just looking in general what the maximum amount of nutrient loading or nutrient reduction is going to be accomplished through that project. So this past fiscal year, as you can see, we had the $200 million funded for 27 projects, which allowed for a reduction of 1 million pounds of total nitrogen and 18,000 pounds of total phosphorus. We were able to fund a suite of projects from continuing with septic to sewer and AWT for wastewater treatment facilities, but also a number of stormwater facilities and also one large regional agricultural project. So really we're able to take advantage of that. And as our BMAPs get updated to meet those 2025 deadlines for the remediation plans, that will include and add to the kind of availability of additional projects to really allow us to zero in on areas of the greatest need and have those projects that we know will get to meet the necessary reductions established in the basin management action plans. And also just to go back, there's one more of note we did receive, and this was highly competitive grant program, just showing the need of this. We had 300 applications and received more than $2.1 billion worth of grant funds in last year alone. So just to show that the amount of projects that are out there, that there is the demand for this level of funding. Just overall to date, from the beginning of the wastewater grant program to last year's water quality improvement grant program funding, we've been able to fund 162 projects, more than $962 million, reducing 1.7 million pounds of nitrogen and 354,000 pounds of total phosphorus, and we're able to target over 39,000 septic tanks. So really being able to fund a large number of projects that are going to have a tremendous benefit on water quality. But I will urge as we look forward and start assessing what these projects are doing and how they're benefiting, the time it does take for those projects to get designed, permitted, constructed, and then the time amount that it takes to see those nutrient reductions have a correlation and ecological response. You know, it's taken decades to have water quality become impaired, and doing these projects is going to move the needle, it's going to improve water quality, but it's also going to take time for those to really be seen in those ecological changes. And just to go in a little bit more on the projects and the funding made available, the legislature has also been able to fund projects in Biscayne Bay, our springs, alternative water supply, and a suite of other areas of the state, the Caloosahatchee, and all of these really trying to take a statewide initiative on being able to provide these projects and reduce nutrient pollution across the state in our as large of an area as possible in our most needed watersheds. And lastly, I just wanted to point out this parts of DEP's website that are available to the public that can allow policymakers, stakeholders, general public to kind of see what is the progress being made. We have our statewide annual report that we put out every year. We've put that into a online story map type platform where you can go and click on a GIS map of any of our BMAP areas, and you can see the projects, and you can see trend analysis where that sufficient amount of data is possible, and start getting a sense of, you know, how is water quality being improved in the state in these areas. And lastly, we have Protecting Florida Together, which really just focuses on nutrients. We use that to use our blue-green algae alerts, but it also, you can go in any watershed in the state. This is the Caloosahatchee watershed. You can click on any of the basins and sub-basins and be able to see, is that water body or segment of water body attaining water quality standards for nitrogen, phosphorus, chlorophyll, and also in those, see, as you can see on the charts to the right, you know, what is the improvement that we're seeing. In some areas, we'll see the improvement. In some areas, we've done a lot of projects, and we may not have seen that improvement yet, or it could be that there's other sources upstream that then go downstream and allows us to really be able to see if what we're doing and the projects we're doing with the money that the legislature is providing us is doing what we want it to do. And if not, you know, there can be a whole number of reasons, from hydrological to, like I said, upstream sources. But all of, we know the amount of nutrients based on our TMDLs that need to be reduced. You know, it's just making sure we're reducing them in the right place and the right manner and the right source. And so that's what all of that data collection and everything that we do, trying to provide that. And so really good resource. Encourage all of you to look at the STAR report, go on Protecting Florida Together. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Blogg, thank you for that. And members, I would encourage you to look at the outreach portion that he's talking about online as we continue to develop this dashboard approach so that you have an opportunity to see where impaired water bodies are throughout the state and the effects that we're having on those issues through DEP. Questions? Do we have questions for Mr. Blaylock? Good, because I was about to say, where's Escamani when you need her? So Representative Mooney, recognized.
Thank you, Chair. A great presentation. And being somebody who was mandated to put in central sewage in Monroe County, I can tell you that it's amazing how fast the environment recovers. That said, best technology, that's all great. You know, I know this place would never be central sewage in the state of Florida. There's plenty of options out there to create better water quality across the board. But the question is, do you also monitor oil? For instance, BP Horizon dropped 200 million gallons of oil, but every year 180 million gallons come off the roads into our watershed. So are you also monitoring the oil as it comes off in our streams? Because otherwise, sort of like a moment.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. We do. If there's any kind of water body where you see even the slightest surface film of petroleum, whether it's oil or gas or anything, and we become aware of it, we will go out and assess that. There's both the state and federal government response, depending on the size of oil spills, but it is something that we identify, clean up, and work with entities to do that. Yeah.
Follow up.
Chair, so you do work with FDOT then on their, every time they do a road improvement project for stormwater runoff containment?
Yes.
Because, I mean, it's critical that 180 million gallons in our waterways off our roads every year. It's probably much higher than that now. That statistic I took from way back in the city of Alamorada, we were doing our canal testing and stuff. That's critical. I mean, that's critical. So as long as you're working with FDOT and everybody, all the other agencies, to make sure that we not only take care of our septic, but also our oil spills along the road. Thank you.
Representative Cassell. Question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope I step in for Representative Escamani well.
Do your best.
I just was curious with regards to the wastewater grant program. Are there funds still available?
Director.
So we have adopted, or we've identified all of the projects for this past year, and we were able to fund the full $200 million once session is over and the budget pass and we know what the amount of funding is. We have an online portal that we open up and we solicit and have projects get submitted to us, and then we'll do the next cycle next year.
Thank you.
Representative Andrade, question?
Thank you, Chair. Would somebody mind going to slide 11, number 11? Thank you very much. Is one of the criteria for the award of this grant that the applicant be in the Eastern time zone?
Chair.
You're recognized if you want to take a shot at that.
Sure. No, it's not. I mean, I will say out of a lot of the parts of the state, when particularly looking at nutrient pollution, the panhandle and one of the criteria in statute is looking at where the greatest need for reduction are. We funded a lot of projects and outside of even our wastewater and water quality grant programs, a lot of our springs funding, and we also, as far as with the oil spill, a lot of restore funding we're looking at using for that area. But yes, it was a,
thank you.
I see a little green out there in the panhandle area. So. Yeah.
Follow up?
Yeah, I'll give you a follow up, maybe.
Thank you, Chair. As far as the rate of population growth, how much of a, from my perspective, way out, beyond that little blip of green where I live, is that the areas of the state that are seeing the highest, like, per capita growth, like, say, like, Freeport in Walton County, they're in a position where they are scrambling to accommodate for new capacity, and that capacity is growing faster than they can develop a tax base to actually fund that capacity. How much of that kind of, being put on the back foot because of just a massive explosion in population growth is taken into consideration to almost, like, if we can, avoid some of the circumstances that might have caused the stuff on the Coosahatchee, down way farther south than I live?
Recognize.
Yeah, and primarily for these water quality improvement grants, we're really looking at projects that are going to have nutrient reduction versus funding expansion of capacity. But we do have our state revolving loan program, particularly in areas of the small communities and lower socioeconomic communities have loan forgiveness, principal forgiveness. And so we really, if you're talking about expanding infrastructure to increase capacity, try to kind of initially push towards the SRF program. But if it's trying to get off septic tanks and hook into sewer and that needs additional capacity, then we'll balance that. And but if it's purely sewer already exists and we want to expand just for a new development, we'll typically not score as high as an area that's strictly a nutrient reducing project, and we'll try to steer towards the SRF program.
Other questions? Representative Gottlieb.
Just curious, since we are oriented to slide 11, how come the southern portion of the state is also not in? I'm not saying not included, but can you explain it, perhaps?
Sure.
Thank you.
So when you get to the very bottom of the green where the Lake Okeechobee, St. Lucie, and Coosahatchee, that's all Everglades restoration and SERP, and that's its own water quality improvement component outside of kind of the BMAP process. They have water quality standards and the restoration plan that's in place with the state and federal government. And then Miami-Dade, they're in the process of doing their reasonable assurance plan, which is basically a BMAP that's being undertaken by Miami-Dade County right now. So that will encompass that area. And so a lot of, once you get kind of south of that Coosahatchee area, a lot of that is, it's there's not a lot of different like kind of stakeholders, and like I said, it's Everglades Restoration, and then the Keys also have a lot of their own restoration plans that have been in place, already required a lot of the getting off septic tanks and advanced waste treatment capacity.
Yeah, I think you'd seen a lot of this, not grant program, but all these other areas, as Mr. Blight was referring to, have previous legislation, previous funding that's moved them. And so when you go back and look at the grant program, how they award the grants, the majority of those were really kind of through the center of the state because of all the other models in place prior to the grant program being initiated. Other questions? No other questions. Mr. Blaylock, thank you for being here. Thank you for the presentation. Members will have a test next week. So there was not many questions, but thank you for your attention today. And so that concludes our agenda. Seeing no further business, Representative Mooney moves, we rise, and without objection, we're adjourned.